is episode 1C, or Charlie, of the Software Freedom Law Show. Hi, this is the Software Freedom Law Show. I'm Karen Sandler.
And I'm Bradley Kuhn. And see, now we do this now, the introduction of the names.
I think it was very smooth.
I noticed that Linux Outlaws does this too. Not only does NPR do it, but Linux Outlaws does it as well. So
we have many models.
We have many great models.
Many role models.
Should we get right into the topic today, or should we...
I don't know. I hope everybody had... everybody who is celebrating American Thanksgiving had a good week off and that... long weekend. I don't know why you're looking at me very strangely, as if I'm mentioning it. I just sort of felt like we should mention it because we had such a long delay between the last.
I did GPL enforcement the whole time, so. So that's what I did. That's what I'll keep doing.
That's great. Yeah. What did I do? I did some work too. I can't remember what. I did a tax exemption application. You're also looking at me weirdly.
Because it's not the topic we were going to talk about. So I'm worried we're like already off topic.
No, but I did bring a corporate tie-in for our topic.
A what?
A little tie-in to the corporate law, my old securities law, because you always make fun of me that I'm a securities law geek. And sometimes
I don't make fun of you.
I like sharing some of the ways that you can find out information about what's going on with companies by looking on the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission's website, and
Bradley is
sort of craning his neck to look at the piece of paper I put down in front of him, which was this Form 8K, current report by Sun Microsystems. This is actually was filed back in November, and what this statement is it's that you can flip it over. And
I'm giving proper sound effects for the reading of a piece of paper. Go ahead. Sorry, Karen laugh with the shaking of the paper. So go ahead, Karen.
So it's actually a current report. And so if you're a public company and you have to file with the Securities and Exchange Commission, you have to tell them when there are material updates in the state of your business. And there are definitions about what is considered important enough to be material and to be disclosed. But on November 9th, Sun filed a current report that said that that the European Commission issued statements of objection on the proposed merger with Oracle.
Indeed, so, it does say that. I am reading it now.
This is actually how the story broke.
Oh, was it really? It was the SEC filing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only way that they knew.
I find that it's really interesting to follow the filings of companies that are free software companies just to see, you know, what they think they have to tell to their investors, what's important enough, and then you find out things like this.
So you said follow news about free software companies. So why exactly do you follow something about Oracle?
That's a hilariously phrased question.
I'm just giving my time.
And I'm not really quite sure why you're bringing up Oracle in this context, because it was
Sun's filing, although it mentions Oracle.
But I won't get into that discussion with you.
Well, actually, that's an interesting discussion. Maybe we could open the discussion there. One question is Sun a free software company, or was it becoming a free software company? How much of a free software company was it, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think regardless of... making any analysis on either of these companies as to how much of a free software company they are, I think it's just important to say that this merger involves several important free software projects.
That's definitely true.
I think that's what I would focus on rather than trying to evaluate the state of a company. To me, that sort of seems irrelevant. Especially from our perspective as looking after the nonprofit side of these free software projects and communities, I'm more focused on what are the free software projects that are involved and how are they affected by something like this.
You make a good point, although I think that it's important to understand where the corporate community is at with regard to their friendliness or less than friendliness to free software. Right, so let's take Sun for an example.
It's really interesting that you say that, because I just think that, you know, I don't know, you often, and I know we've had a lot of these discussions with respect to Microsoft too, you know, you do take a history of a company's behavior and, you know, generally, but what we always wind up coming back to with Microsoft and anybody else is that these companies are what they do, and they are what they do over a long period of time.
Yeah, and that's why I want to talk about Sun specifically. Sorry,
I'm just saying that, you know, we can evaluate till we're blue in the face, And in some ways that's important, and in some ways it's not. And what I think, so just for our listeners, what we are going to talk about in this podcast is an opinion that, that Eben Moglen, our executive director, and founder of SFLC published, for the benefit of the European Commission, basically clarifying some of the things that, that the Commission said in their statement of objections, which is what Sun was talking about in their current report. Mm-hmm. And so we're gonna talk a little bit about what Eben said and why, and about how some of these preconceptions or misconceptions about the GPL come to play in this situation.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to analyze, and I want to do it. But yeah. I also want to talk about Sun's history. Why can't I talk about Sun's?
Oh, you absolutely can talk about Sun's history.
So my feeling about Sun.
I just don't want to go too far afield.
I won't go too far afield. That would be very short. So when I look at Sun, I remember a company that was basically incredibly anti-community back in the 90s during the Java situation. They were threatening developers who were trying to implement free software versions of Java. 90s were a tough time between the free software community and Sun. And Sun, unlike Microsoft, which I think Microsoft's, as I've talked about, their purported moves towards being friendly to free and open source software is not really genuine. I think Sun actually made genuine attempts. I think they came from a culture of free software in the past. The BSD stuff that they originally based SunOS off of, for a while they were actually contributing back to the main BSD code line way back in the 80s, and then slowly they stopped. So you look like you're not even going on too long. But
no, it's okay.
I think they were moving towards a free software thing, and I think their involvement in various free software projects and their interest in acquiring stuff, first of all, Star Office to make it free software as Open Office was their first, mm-hmm. pretty much their first attempt. Their long problematic history with Java. They were very serious about Java getting interactive with the free software stuff. Once the free software stuff got good enough, they had to pay attention. So there was that as well. And of course, then there's the issue of their purchase of MySQL AB, which was the company that was the mm-hmm. sole copyright holder of MySQL. So Sun was actually in my view, a very vulnerable state. Or I guess is currently in a very vulnerable state with regard to, it's on the cusp of really becoming a serious free software company, but it's struggling with the right way to do it. And I think that's that sort of vulnerable transition state is what left it open to be ready for acquisition by somebody, because it's probably has more value than it looks like it has. I'm not a market analyst, so I'm just saying stuff that I'm making up. So, but I think as far as its engineering value, it has the engineers are changing to become more free software, open sourcery engineers type people, and that's a real value to a company in the world with a future of free software. So I think Sun's in an interesting state, which I don't know if that's necessarily why Oracle's interested in acquiring them.
I mean, there's been a lot of speculation in the press about why, you know, about what the rationale is behind the acquisition and you know, whether it makes sense and what its ultimate outcome is. And, you know, as I said, I prefer to focus on what the free software projects at stake are, mm-hmm. You know, and focus on how this might affect them.
Right. Well, those are the three, right? I mean, those are the three key. Well, I guess we should also count VirtualBox and OpenSolaris. I forgot mm-hmm. to mention those two. I don't think OpenSolaris is all that important, but I'm also a GNU/Linux user
right.
and have not really cared what happens with OpenSolaris all that much. ZFS was pretty much the only interesting technology, and ButterFS is so far along that I don't know what we're going to get from OpenSolaris anyway right. in the free software world. So I think in VirtualBox, when you look at things like Xen and QAMU, it's not really necessary. So that's why I focus on those three as the three mm-hmm. things that
sure.
as free software or quasi free software-ish things, those are the three things that are important that Sun currently has control of that mm-hmm. Oracle, of course, would gain control of.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I guess what is central to this opinion is that when we talk about control, when you talk about control in light of software that has been licensed under the GPL, it's sort of a different discussion.
Yeah, and that relates to actually a topic we had on a podcast a while back where we were talking about open core companies and mm-hmm. the idea of centralized copyright. And I think one of the interesting things with regard to this is the European Commission, in its investigation of whether or not the merger should go through, has focused almost exclusively, it seems, although we don't know everything they're thinking about. But,
and I should also say that I don't think that the statements of objection have actually been published. I was looking for them, yeah. and I haven't done an exhaustive search to see if anyone's posted them or...
Yeah, it's
or not. I haven't actually seen the objections,
indeed, and
so
and I'm not,
I don't know for sure.
Right. And I'm not surprised by that either, because from the folks I've worked with in Europe, I don't know much about the European structure at all. So I can't talk with any level of authority, but I remember during the patent fights. So there was this big software patent fight in Europe, and it's actually still raging on, but some of the early rounds of it, I was talking a lot with colleagues in Europe, and the commission actually does tend to operate in this very non-transparent way, generally speaking. And that was actually a big problem in the patent fight, because the folks in Europe had the parliament behind them, but the commission was sort of not necessarily acting in ways that the parliament had set the guidelines for. And there was this big fight about the software patent issue, because there was a period of time, which may still be ongoing, I'd have to ask a European patent expert to be sure, but there at least was a period of time where the European Commission was granting effectively software patents, right, when they weren't supposed to be, because the parliament had not approved them. So the European Commission is known for sort of being somewhat of an independent entity that is somewhat opaque, I think, to people. And that may be why it's hard to find these.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You'll see. I mean, I think actually technically as we're recording this, we haven't actually published our request, but Eben also filed a request with the European Commission, which right, I think should be up by the time, right, actually by the time this is published, asking to appear as an independent expert for the European Commission.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what the letter we did publish, I think, is useful about this specific issue related to the MySQL copyrights. So to get back to that,
and if you look at the letter, and this is, I guess, what I was trying to get at, is that if you look at the letter, you'll see that he refers to only being furnished with a portion of the statements of objection. So like, keep in mind as we talk about this and as you read the letter that, you know, there is some opacity to this process, and that, you know, we actually haven't seen all these statements of objection. So we're going to talk about how we think the commission might have a misunderstanding about some of the ways that the GPL works in, you know, in a commercial way, but that doesn't, having not really seen everything that they said, it's a little.
Yeah, it's one of these,
strange.
It's a tea leaf sort of situation where we know some things about what the commission might be thinking. It has been covered in the press. I think a lot of people have seen it covered in the press as this European Commission investigation has been going on. But it's one of these situations where we don't actually know all the details. But it is clear that they are particularly concerned about Oracle being in control of the MySQL copyrights.
Oh, and sorry, to be above board, we should also disclose SFLC's, which the letter also discloses, but we should probably also just tell our readers, our listeners, very strange, but tell our listeners about the fact that Oracle is a donor to SFLC, you know, and just clear the air there, because I want to make sure that everybody understands that there is that donor relationship.
And also mentioned in the letter is that Monty Vidanis is a donor, who is the person who first raised an objection
to
the European Commission.
Exactly.
So we have donations on both sides, but I will say right now that I really disagree with Monty's position, do a great deal, even though he's a donor to SFLC. I still disagree fundamentally with his position, and I have historically and for a long time talked extensively about how bad Oracle is for free software and how their proprietary licensing business is for people who run databases.
Well, this is one of the interesting things about being a nonprofit, is that you when you take in unrestricted donations, you know, you, the company that gives you the donation or the person who gives you the donation can't guarantee that your interests will remain aligned with them. You know, that you're basically, I say interests aligned, that's such a lawyerly statement, but you know.
Well, my interests are not aligned with Oracle or Monty for that matter.
Right, well, what I'm saying is that we always act in the public interest. That's a nonprofit, that's the role of a nonprofit. Yeah. And so we're gonna come out with a statement that we believe is correct.
Yeah. And indeed, and in the public interest, I think both, but I think everybody is confused and wrong about some things. I think Monty is wrong for a number of reasons that I'm gonna talk about in a minute. I think the European Commission is confused in part by Monty's letter and not being well-educated, which is what our letter is trying to do, is help them get educated about these issues. And I think Oracle is bad because Oracle has generally been a company that is not friendly to free software and has tried to keep free software off of people's computers because they've pushed down people's throats these proprietary licensing database models and telling people they need proprietary databases just to run simple websites and other such things.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that overall characterization of Oracle.
Oh, I know friends who have
been.
But I would say that
regardless of how you feel about the business entity, I think you and I, coming at it from a nonprofit perspective, will generally be quite critical of corporate control of free software projects generally. And when you talk about the centralization of copyright and other kinds of control issues there, you know, we're going to come up with our own, with our own view that isn't going to support any particular business interest at any given time.
I think that's generally correct. And I think that actually goes to my disagreement with Monty's point, which Monty spent all his time in the free software world, developing inside a company, which was at the time MySQL AB, which was later bought by Sun, which is now trying to be bought by Oracle. And he got a view of how GPL structures work in this centralized, not proprietary, but centralized corporate, for-profit corporate copyright control. And there's certain types of business models that pan out, namely the proprietary relicensing
system. We've actually talked about this in another. So this is kind of an interesting topic because it joins together a number of things that we've talked about in the past. But you may remember that we had an episode where we talked about the different licensing models, and we talked about the so-called dual licensing model.
Right, what I call it proprietary relicensing, because dual licensing can be multiple.
Well, I was going to say I called it so-called for that reason, and I wanted to point out that you'll hear people talking a lot about dual license. I think we actually, Eben actually in his letter refers to it as dual licensing, and that's in part because that's a common way for people to talk and think about it.
I did beg him not to, but the problem he faces in writing that, of course, is that everybody calls it that, even though it's a confusing term for it, and so you're in this weird situation where either you have to use a term and propagate the confusion, or use a new term they're not familiar with and they think it's a different thing. It's a really tough situation linguistically to deal with, but I have the luxury of being able to say it's proprietary relicensing. That's what we're talking about.
There's another term too that we talked about. Oh, disjunctive licensing.
No, that's the other type of dual.
I'm confused.
Yeah, that's the thing that is dual licensing that other people have called. That's the Larry Wall style dual licensing for Perl, which is artistic or GPL disjunctive.
Right.
So I call that disjunctive.
Wow. See, even if I'm confused.
Because you know all this stuff.
But we talk about. We talk about these things with particular terminology all the time. And so trying to initiate a shift in vocabulary like that is really tough.
Well, that's why I initiated, so that we won't be confused anymore.
Well, I think it's worth talking about, because otherwise we're going to talk about it and no one's going to know what we're talking about. Actually, maybe I wouldn't know what we're talking about.
So that's the model that MySQL used. And you can go back looking at criticisms from the free software world at that business model. I remember years ago, my old boss, Richard Stallman, coined a term for it, which he called it barely legitimate, which I've propagated since then because I think it's the right term for it. It's one of these things where, they're using a free software license, but what they're using it for is to try and convince people who want a proprietary license to pay a lot of money to get a separate proprietary license.
Didn't you call it ghettoizing the GPL version?
Well, that is the question. Right. So the thing that makes it barely legitimate, i.e. legitimate at all, is when they're using the money from the relicensing business to really feed the development of the GPL version. Then at least we're getting better GPL code. But in fact, many people use this type of, and I've written a lot about this on my blog. We talked about it on a previous podcast.
This came up for our listeners. This actually came up in the TomTom discussion.
Yeah, I think it came up there too. Right. But the reason I've written about it so much is because I've been saying that it's this open core single copyright holder proprietary corporate entity model is basically a new shareware model where the GPL version is available, but all the developers are employed by the for-profit company. The copyrights are held by the for-profit company. If you want to get your patch into the main version, you must assign it to the for-profit company so that they can then relicense your patch.
Well, this is great. This is the problem with the with relying on a dual or proprietary licensing model, which is that in order to maintain that business model, you have to require that every additional contribution be assigned to that same company so that they can carry on their business. So they're not going to, they're not going to accept patches if they're not assigned, because otherwise their whole business model for their other version is moot. There's no way to do it. So, having that happen, it just creates the snowball of assigned copyrights. So that's a real problem with that business model. I think one of the things that the letter says is that, it's not the only commercial model around the GPL. And I know you're trying so hard not to interrupt me because, somebody criticized you for interrupting me the last time, but I actually come from an environment where all of our conversations are interrupted. I'm a New Yorker, and so we always interrupt each other when we discuss. And so sometimes I expect to be interrupted as a way of carrying on the conversation, and sometimes I expect to interrupt you.
Well, I just started making faces instead of interrupting you. So that, so, but the point I wanted to raise was exactly where you were headed, which is that what I think has happened here, although, as we've talked about, we don't know for complete certainty, but it looks like Monti's letter was taken very seriously by the European Commission. The European Commission was influenced by Monti's experience of using that proprietary relicensing model as his primary business model. And he's somewhat convinced the European Commission, rather strangely, that the only way to really profit from GPL software is to be engaged in the proprietary relicensing model, which mm-hmm. we know on its face is not the case. And, right. and Evan actually uses one of my famous examples, not famous, but well, one of my constantly used examples in there of a company called Code Sorcery, which is doing just GCC work and don't have the copyrights to the GCC. In fact, the FSF has the copyrights to GCC, but they add improvements and do changes and do custom installations and custom assistance to people who want to use GCC for strange and wild architectures, if you will. And they have had a wonderful business model around that. And there's plenty of examples.
Oh, and there are plenty of other examples, most famously Red Hat. You know, they don't hold the copyrights to Linux.
Yeah, or most of the software they produce, actually.
Right.
I guess I should say, Red Hat has lots of copyrights across various different code bases, like the GNOME
code base,
so forth, but they aren't the sole copyright holder.
Exactly. It's not a, see, I just interrupted you like three times in a row. It's not a dual or proprietary licensing model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think where we're at with this is really trying to help the commission understand that Monti's point of view is not the only possible point of view. I think Monti has a point that is a business model that people use. I happen to think it's a business model that has run its course and we should get rid of and not use anymore. There are all these other business models out there that could be used. And then the question is what happens with MySQL when Sun is acquired by Oracle, or I guess if Sun mm-hmm. is acquired by Oracle? And that's a complicated question, I think.
Should we talk about that in our next segment?
Okay, well, I guess we can do a segment break. That seems reasonable, and you want to hear the music
and
all.
I do really like
the problem
music.
Is my screensaver kicked in while we were recording, so I now have to I've undone the screensaver now, so we can start. We'll come back.
We'll
in the
be
next
right
segment.
Back. So during that little musical interlude, I was flipping through the letter that Evan wrote. And one of the things that I love that he did in there was he actually enumerated the different possibilities of what could happen post-merger.
Yeah, I think that some of those are probably pretty accurate. I don't know if I necessarily agree with all the conclusions. I think some of those cases could be really bad for free software and bad for MySQL. And bad for the GPL space because.
Well, it's interesting because really the focus here is what would its impact on competition be from the European Commission's perspective, not what is good for free software.
I know.
That's what the letter is written for. It's not written for it's more of a clarification about how the GPL works more than it's doing something else, which is what you're sort of talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I wish the commission could be convinced that what they should do is the best thing for the freedom of software users, but obviously that's not their mandate.
Well, if it were left up to me and you, Bradley, every free software project would be in a nonprofit, in its own nonprofit organization, decentralized, copyrighted. Well, actually, centralized in a nonprofit.
Or decentralized
with individual holders, and that's sort of the way you and I would probably do it. And while we agree that that permissive licensing is appropriate in a lot of circumstances, you and I would lean towards the something copyleft, the GPL most of the time, GPL v3 most likely. You're giving me these.
Well, actually, because you didn't go far enough for me. If it were
AGPL,
up to me, well, if we're up to me, all published software. All published and deployed software in the world would be free software, if it were up to me.
Well, if it were up to me as well, and I think that's totally right. But what I'm saying here is that that's not the scope of this letter.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest worry about this merger. I think that it's a very dangerous situation for free software database implementations, particularly GPL'd ones, because MySQL is the primary GPL'd one. There's of course Postgres, which is talked about in the letter, which is under a permissive license, but I really don't think Oracle having control of MySQL is good. I think the right answer for MySQL, if I could just tell the commission to do whatever I thought was right for them to do, I would say, well, that you got to take MySQL, you've got to release it under GPLv3, right. You've got to get the copyrights into a nonprofit entity which promises not to proprietarize or relicense, and that would be the answer.
Well, but then you would be going after a lot of other companies too for the same thing. I mean, you would go after Canonical for asking for assignments on Ubuntu.
I go after them for that.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's what I'm saying is that that's just, it's a little bit beyond the scope of what we're talking about here. And while, you know, we can advocate towards a more ideal world, you know, we're sort of talking about something more specific here.
Can I say on our podcast what I wish for?
You can absolutely say. We are getting into the holiday season. It's too bad you can't. ask for that for the holidays.
I don't really celebrate them, but I do wish.
But other people do, and they often give in the holiday spirit. It's just unfortunately not something that the European Commission will say for the holiday season we would like to.
Yeah, why not? They could say, we will put the copyrights of MySQL into a nonprofit entity. That nonprofit entity will be chartered to never be permitted to proprietarize MySQL. And furthermore, that nonprofit entity will release MySQL under GPLv3 or later.
Right? Yeah. Or later. Yeah. Right.
But actually, what I would really want is, before that happened, for MySQL to be released by Oracle under v3 or later to get the additional patent provisions. Although, Evan makes a really good argument about the implicit patent grant that's already going to be given. Under v2. Right. The implicit patent grant in v2 is good. The explicit patent grant in v3 is even better. Because not only does v3 have the explicit patent provisions, it also has the same implicit patent grant that v2 does.
That's right.
On top of it. So it's got double indemnity or something.
Not indemnity, but it's...
I know. I just wanted to say
that. But you could say two kinds of grants.
I know. I only wanted to say double indemnity because it's a film noir movie.
Oh, is it? I don't know it. But it sounds like a game, show.
Okay, this might be a spoiler if you have seen Double Indemnity. Speed a couple of seconds. So Double Indemnity is about this guy who gets an insurance policy on his wife, and if she's killed in certain ways or dies in certain ways, he gets a double payment. So he tries to plot to kill his wife so he can get the double money.
Is she miserable, or she must be if it's film noir?
Yeah, everybody's miserable, but it was the first, the reason I studied it in film classes, because it was the first, I think the first film to actually, it used blinds to make all that sort of film noir effect. So they shot a lot of the light through blinds to make like lines across the guy. And like, I remember my professor talking about, like you could see that he's trapped. He's in a prison literally by the blinded light. And therefore, so anyway, that's a film noir movie. So
I don't think they had any film class where I went to college.
That's what I took for my English elective, fiction and film, which was really, everybody wanted to take it. And it was because they thought it would be some easy class. And it was one book, one movie per week. And some in the mid-semester, it was two movies per week. And people were like, whoa, this is a lot of work. And they all dropped it. But I stayed in.
I bet if they had a film class at Cooper Union, it would be very popular. Maybe they have one now.
So anyway, so that's why I said Double Indemnity, mainly just to mention that movie. But but it would be nice if that were to be the case. I know these things are not going to happen.
And what I think is really important here, and you know, is that what Evan's letter highlights is that in fact, through a lot of these assumptions that the commission seems to be making, it sort of gives short shrift to the GPL and how it works.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate. I guess I'm just pessimistic that any outcome
can
come.
You're always pessimistic.
That's true. But in this specific case, I've been pessimistic generally about the MySQL code base specifically and the whole single copyright holder in a corporate entity model in general.
Right.
Because I think there's a lot of dangers there that frankly, myself, I didn't see. 10 years ago, I didn't really get it that the single place copyright was held was fine because there is the permission to fork.
Right. Well, that's what I was about to say is that essential with the distribution under the GPL is the permission to create a whole new branch, you know, to fork it. And that's really important.
Well, yeah.
And it's, and what, you know, what you're granting under the GPL is you're sort of limiting the, you're sort of limiting what rights the copyright holder has. Because they only have licensing rights to issue another license and the power to enforce those, you know, enforce the copyrights and infringement on licenses that they've, you know, that they've issued under already. So, you know, it's great because it grants all the permissions to users and to developers to create new versions of the software without having to worry about getting permission from the copyright holder. So that's intrinsic to the GPL, and that's a really important thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. It makes it possible to survive, but it doesn't necessarily make it easy. And I think that with a company like Oracle, whose goal is to make the entire world use proprietary database products, having control of MySQL is really dangerous because we don't know what they're going to do. Eben contemplates a couple of things in his letter of things that they might do and tries to dispute whether those things would likely
be
bad.
I guess at this point we shouldn't go through all of them.
Yeah, I think people should read in detail
but
if they're interested.
I suggested, and if you don't want to read the whole thing, this is on page 7.
Yeah. So
and the scenarios of possible Oracle anti-competitive conduct and the resulting GPL dynamics. So Oracle may not like the fact that Evan specifically said all of the ways they could.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily all the ways. It's all of the ways that could be thought of at the time. And so,
well, that's
there could
I mean,
be
but
other
if you
things.
Say that, there always can be other things with everything. I mean, that's everything.
My point exactly, and that's why the centralized copyright model is so dangerous. I think this whole sequence of events,
a for-profit centralized.
Yeah, for-profit, or any time, actually, even in a nonprofit could be dangerous too. The key thing is to make sure that the nonprofit is committed to always releasing it as free software. Basically, if the nonprofit could enter a deal where it could proprietarize, that's dangerous too.
Right, actually. I'm thinking of nonprofits that are where their charitable mission is. You know, and when I say nonprofits, I was actually thinking charity. So, right. So I was thinking about different things. You could have a nonprofit that's trade association.
Right.
So, I mean, for a nonprofit that's set up to support free and open source software, you never have to worry.
Yeah, I can
just wind up and go home.
I won't.
You didn't see, but I was shaking my hand at Bradley to not interrupt me at that moment.
But I can actually think, and I won't name them because I won't go shaming people that are not very well known already. But I can think of 3 nonprofits that aren't primarily in the free software space that distribute proprietary software.
Yeah,
so
that's totally
right off the top
true.
Of my head, I can think
it's
of a couple.
It's completely fair.
And
yeah.
So it's not just being a nonprofit or a for-profit. It's being an organization that's committed to always releasing the code you've got as free software. And if you're not that kind of organization, which Oracle clearly is not, in fact, even Sun is clearly not, and I agree with you, Canonical is clearly not, and so forth, and Microsoft certainly is not. But any organization that isn't committed to always releasing their software as open source and free software, we can be in trouble. We can have problems with the fact that the code base may eventually go proprietary. And MySQL AB, the company, for years hired all the developers in the community. Now, a community never got started because anytime there was a community developer, they just got hired, which was
in
some ways
good. You can
think
of a lot of other companies like that too. I can think of one in particular that was on my mind recently.
Yeah. And I think anytime, and this is.
So there are a lot of companies that do that hire. And we totally support free software developers finding employment opportunities at companies that support their free software development. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's another issue, although it's all related to the same point,
yeah.
Which is that, you know, what length are we talking about here?
Yeah, and it's a tribute to things, projects like Linux, the resilience of the Linux project, the Samba project, that have had a diverse copyright and never sort of been tied to any one company because all
of
those
people.
On the
other hand, there are downsides to that diverse copyright holding too.
I know. We don't have to get into those here. But I think on balance, when I have to pick one, right, if I have to pick the lesser of two evils, I want to pick that one. And I wish
that's not
my
what I
want to
pick. I want to pick a nonprofit free software charity that...
I think if we can get
if we're talking about our wishes, that's my holiday wish.
Yeah. Okay. so what's the I don't know how I was about to say what's the upshot, or what do you think is the where this is going to go at this point? I mean, we have so few details.
I'm really not a read of the tea leaves kind of person.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because we have so few details.
It's funny. I was asked recently to speak at a practicing law institute. It's called the PLI. They basically just do continuing legal education for lawyers. And I was asked to give a talk about the future of free and open source software. And I was really stymied. How do you talk about the future? And I realized, but they really don't want me to talk about the future. They really want me to talk about, you know, what's going on now that people might not be familiar with that will dictate what happens in the near future. And this is sort of what we're talking about now. I won't look into, I can't predict what the commission is going to decide ultimately, but I really look forward to hearing about it. Mm-hmm. There's a hearing on Thursday, December 10th, right? That's Thursday, December 10th.
I can pull a calendar up, but okay.
I think so. And this, so in a couple of days from the release of this episode.
So, yeah. So I think, My feeling is I'm just really worried about what happens to Sun in general. I talk a lot about Microsoft and the Sam Ramji era and the era before that and so forth, when I still feel that Microsoft is not serious about being friendly to free software. I think they're putting on a friendly face to try and pull some shenanigans, and they're still suing people, or still at least going after people for patent infringement, we believe. We don't know if they haven't sued anybody in the last few months, but you know, they probably will soon again. But when I look at something like Sun, and I think about the fights, I mean, I was involved with them because I was involved in the ClassPath project early when we were trying to implement Java as free software, and Sun was so unfriendly. And we were terrified of Sun, in fact. We had all these discussions about, is Sun going to sue us when we start publishing free software that re-implements Java? I mean, we were serious. I remember having long meetings with people about that issue, terrified of Sun. Basically, the way we're worried about Microsoft coming after free software, we used to be worried about Sun coming after free software. And nobody would have those discussions about Sun 6 months ago. They would never sit down and think about that, because the Sun of 6 months ago was a company making some attempt to be friendly. They're not perfect by any means, and they make mistakes, and I disagree with them on a lot of issues. I never liked their contributor licensing agreement for OpenOffice, and I think the document Evan's written talks about the problems that OpenOffice had, and you certainly read that, because I think there were problems there, and it's a real quagmire, the OpenOffice community, because of Sun's policies. But no one can say they weren't at least trying and weren't definitely better than they were in the 90s. Oracle has never really tried to be friendly to free software.
I don't know. I find it difficult to talk about this trying to be friendly or not trying to be friendly. I do. And I think you'll find that from our discussions, you'll find a healthy skepticism towards any real corporate control, because the motivation there is going to be, you know, shareholder bottom line. And you know, I don't want to sound like I'm this radical, you know, anti-corporate person, because I'm not. And we happily, you know, free software is in a space where we've created a license like the GPL, or the FSF has created a license like the GPL, often with our help, where a robust model can be achieved, where, you know, we have something like copyleft software, and that really works, and you can create successful commercial models. You're looking at me.
The reason I'm wincing is because you're making a perfect ending, and there's one more thing I have to say, and it would have been a perfect ending, but I really have to point out, look, I've criticized Obama's people always start sentences with look, which is really not a good way to talk to people. So I've actually been mentioning that. That's like an Obama's talking point, so I'm trying to stop saying look. So I will retract my look, comma. But I remember a time when Oracle really hated GNU Linux systems. This was back in the 90s. They said they're not real Unix systems. This is in the days when Oracle only ran on Big Iron Unix type stuff, and they would not port. And there was this subset in the Linux using community that wanted Oracle to port. And I was really against that. And the reason I was against that is because I knew if Oracle ported and Oracle came over to running their proprietary database products on free software systems, that would be bad for free software ultimately, because otherwise people would have to put a lot of effort into writing free software databases on free software systems. And if Oracle came in and started going to every GNU Linux user and coming after them, trying to get them to buy Oracle licenses, that it was bad for free software databases. And I think that's borne out. I think that we didn't get as much advancement in Postgres and MySQL as we would have if think about how quickly Linux has been deployed in the whole LAMP stack. Imagine if the LAMP stack were the only option. Like if there were no Oracle on Linux, right? If there had never been an Oracle port, we'd be in a much better spot, because so many people would have put more work into the free software versions of Postgres and MySQL. So I know that
Oracle... But you know, we're back in tea leaf situation now.
No, but I believe this with all my heart. Okay, yes, it's opinion, not fact. I don't have... Mm-hmm. I'm talking about alternate realities. But I saw it happen, because I saw there was this thrust at that moment in like the 1999-2000 era, when people were saying, crap, we need a better database, because MySQL is not good enough yet. Postgres is, and at that point, Postgres was sort of still like an uncoordinated group of code. It wasn't even really together. It was from some various different parts from old systems. And people were saying, we want GNU Linux adopted. The only way we're going to get GNU Linux adopted is if we get a really good database. And there were programmers coming out of the woodwork around that time looking at that problem. And that really slowed down a lot when Oracle was available, because you could get a proprietary database for your GNU Linux system. And I feel like that was a shrewd move on Oracle's part. There's no question about that. Selling proprietary software that runs on free software systems is very shrewd. IBM does it too. And everybody does that because it's smart if your goal is to market proprietary software people and take away their freedom. And that's what Oracle's goal is. And so my feeling is that Sun was actually, Sun was in the process of becoming a different type of company. And I don't think Oracle's in anywhere near where Sun was in that process, if they're in it at all.
I honestly don't know. And I think we're going to find out, and I'm looking forward to finding out.
Oh, I'm not.
I am at heart an optimist, and you are at heart a pessimist, and I'm a trained pessimist by being a lawyer, but I think, anyway, we will see. But what I think that we should take, what I take away from this letter is that, and the situation is that, you know, the GPL is a very powerful license.
Well, that I certainly agree with.
So, I guess that's it.
I guess so. Well, people can
read
the details.
Yeah, no, definitely read the letter itself and see what you think.
Yeah, and keep watching the stories as they come out. As Dan Lynch always says on Linux Outlaws, we'll keep an eye on that one. He loves that phrase. But I think you have to hear. The details are so sketchy, and it's not really anybody's fault. It's just that the details are sketchy. No details are really coming out like we wish they were as far as what's all happening. So you're gonna have to watch this one, I suppose, and keep reading all the articles that do come out. So hopefully we've released some information that will help.
Yep.
And that's a good thing. And also, I want to start adding this whole little thing at the end here of all our podcasts. We often forget to mention that you can email us at podcast@softwarefreedom.org.
And you can donate to us. And if you're thinking about making donations to charities for the holiday season, which I keep mentioning, please keep us in mind.
And I've decided to do this. I don't know how dangerous it is, but all the other podcasts do this, so I'm going to start doing it. I am on IRC. We have a channel. It's called #SFLC.
Wow.
I'm a little bit afraid because I'm afraid I'm going to get inundated with questions, but on Freenode, I'm usually on #SFLC every day.
Did we mention that we had an anniversary recently or no?
No, we still haven't mentioned that. I guess we should
at
least say
it. Yeah, because otherwise it will be too long gone to even mention it, and I think it's really cool.
I think technically 2 weeks ago. Was
our one-year anniversary.
Of this podcast.
Not of our work at SFLC.
Correct. Nor the organization itself.
But the podcast. This podcast. So thanks for tuning in.
For 1 year.
You don't really tune in. Thanks for...
Well, they RSS feed at us.
Thanks for listening.
I like to say thanks for RSSing us.
But I'm not sure that all of our listeners do.
Do you think people
Many
go
do,
direct download?
But some people direct download.
Do you really? If you're direct downloading this, you should check out RSS. Bash Potter is a good program if you're a command line geek, but in fact, if you download yourself, you probably want GPotter, which is a nice little GPL program that you can use. And now we're totally off topic talking about what programs to use to gather podcasts.
So we'll talk to you next time. The Software Freedom Law Show is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This show is released under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license.
Why do you stare at my screen the whole time we're doing the podcast?
Because you have this little picture of Mystery Science Theater. I can't even remember the characters' names, but I can feel like I can almost hear them heckling us.